Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Topic today, U.S. triple crisis worsens. What's the triple crisis? Well, obviously the economy, the recession that is now slipping back once again in the fourth quarter, slipping back towards a double dip, a recontraction after the partial recovery in the third quarter. Will get even worse in the first quarter of 21. Second, the COVID crisis, the health crisis. 187,000 infections in one day yesterday, and that's getting worse. Third, the political crisis. Trump now making moves since his attempts to stop vote counts and throw out vote counts did not work. Now he's making moves to try to change the votes in the Electoral College. How can he do that? Well, we'll talk about that. He's calling Michigan Republican legislatures, you know, there's a majority Republican legislature in Michigan. I'll explain why that's critical. He's calling them now to the White House. He's going to try to ask them today, in fact. He's going to try to get them to select their own electors that will select him, Trump, not Biden, even though Biden won the vote in Michigan. And even though you would think the electors have to vote for whoever the popular vote voted. But we'll explain how that's not necessarily true. So the political crisis is deepening now. That's pretty clear. He's got a scorched earth strategy here. Leave the worst possible situation for Biden economically, politically, in any way he can. So when he runs again in 2024, he'll be able to point to the mess that he left and blame it on Biden and the Democrats. I predict he'll announce within a week after January 20th that he's running again. Yes, the nightmare is not over. Anyway, three crises, economic, health, and political, all converging, all deteriorating, each exacerbating, feeding back and exacerbating the other. We'll explain how. Never before in our whole history have we had a convergence of three such terrible developments in this country. Triple crisis. And, by the way, if they don't get this thing under control in the next 6 months, you will begin to see a fourth crisis. Financial. Companies are already beginning to go bankrupt, especially small businesses. Hundreds of thousands will go under over the winter. And when they do, they default on the loans that they already have taken out. Default means you don't pay the principal or interest or both. Default means you go bankrupt. Going bankrupt means whoever loaned you the money in the past has big losses. And if they're financial institutions, which they mostly are, then they freeze up with the losses they have to absorb from the companies that defaulted and went bankrupt. Then you have a financial crisis. We'll talk about that. That's coming in 6 months if they don't get this thing under control in the economy. Okay, let's look at each in a little more detail. How about the economy? Here's an economic update. Retail sales this past week rose, core retail sales, only 0.1% in October after rising 1.6% in September. It's fallen off a cliff. It's worse than it was in the spring, in May. And it's back to a collapse that we experienced back in 2008-09 in consumer sales, retail sales. It's the biggest proportion of consumer spending. And consumer spending is 70% of the economy. It's fallen off a cliff. During a month, October, where people usually increase their spending for the holidays, and in a month when Amazon moved its Amazon Day into October. So it's even greater than it appears. And we're going to see the results of that in the November statistics that come out for retail sales. What about auto sales? Important part. Well, they kind of boomed a little bit over the summer, but now they're flat. In other words, they absorbed, the auto companies absorbed all the backlog of sales that did not occur during the spring. They're just about giving cars away. You know, you can get a 84-month loan, 7-year loan with no interest, and they give you $3,000 to pay the sales tax. They're giving them away to get them off the lots. Well, retail sales, big problem. Well, why are retail sales down? Because people know things are getting tight. You know, the stimulus wore off by August, the stimulus for households and consumers. It wore off. There's no more stimulus. The savings that people had accumulated are being spent down now. Jobs are being lost again. We had a recovery of some of the jobs in service as they reopened the economy. But now with the economy, COVID, beginning to shut down in places and soon more places, well, then people are losing their jobs again. You know, all those restaurant and bar and personal services workers who kind of were called back, often just on part-time and less pay, they are now being laid off again. And some of them permanently. We're now getting permanent layoffs. You know, one of the most interesting statistics on jobs is long-term permanent unemployment rising by the millions every month. People who will never get their jobs back in the foreseeable future. We'll talk about the jobs number shortly. Right? Unemployment claims. Yesterday, new unemployment claims rising again, over 1.1 million. You know, when you get reported in the media is 734,000 or 42,000, I forget which, in new claims for the regular state unemployment benefits system, but they don't talk about the PEUC, federal unemployment benefits, that provided extended 13 weeks and provided benefits, $600 a week, to independent contractors and freelancers and so forth. You got to look at both those programs, and both of them over 1.1 million new claims in 1 week. And you know what? People are exhausting, who are already have been on unemployment benefits, are exhausting those benefits, running out of them at a rate of a million a week. So we got a million newcomers coming in and a million coming out the back end, losing their benefits. Well, people losing their benefits aren't going to go out and spend, right? No. New people coming on unemployment are going to reduce their spending. Businesses that are closing by the hundreds of thousands now, they're not going to spend. Those small business people, they're not going to spend either in the companies or on a personal basis. No, they're not going to spend. This is the worst situation since May. And, you know, the October retail sales, I might add, was the month when you had all these holiday sales promotions that were moved forward because of what had happened earlier in the year. Businesses wanted to get a jump on the holiday season, so they moved it forward in October, like Amazon, right? Promos. And even then, only 0.1% core retail sales. Yeah, down from 1.6%. A collapse. You may see even worse in November. It may go negative during the holiday season. You know, the Federal Reserve Bank, Governor Kaplan, there's seven governors in the Federal Reserve Bank. Kaplan came out this past week and said that we are headed for a double dip. In other words, fourth quarter will be a contraction, not just a slowdown. Look, the economy in the U.S. collapsed 10.5% in the second quarter. It recovered 7.4% in the third quarter. In other words, about 60% of what was lost in the second quarter and the first, because it contracted in the first too, February, March, 7.4%, only 60%, not even two-thirds of a recovery. Now we're slipping back again, right? And we may go negative, according to the Federal Reserve, Kaplan, double dip, if there is no stimulus in Congress, and there will not be. I've been saying that for weeks, given explanations why. And if COVID gets worse, no stimulus, COVID worse, more shutdowns, more people afraid to go out and buy things. There's your double dip, as I've been predicting since March. I've been saying this will be a W-shaped recovery, typical of great recessions, which we're in. Great recessions become bona fide depressions when the financial system crashes as a result of the crash in the real economy. And as I said earlier, that may be coming here within 6 months. Then we will really be in a bona fide depression. We are in a jobs depression for sure. You know, we had 30 million people on benefits between May and August. 30 million just on benefits, unemployment benefits. Then you got to add another 5 million or so who lost their jobs but didn't get benefits or couldn't get them or didn't file for them or dropped out, gave up, or quit. You see all those moms who quit their jobs to take care of the education of their K-6 kids, they're not considered unemployed because they quit. If you quit, you're not unemployed. You may be jobless, but you're not unemployed according to U.S. government statistics. You don't show up. Well, we had 30 million people on benefits between May and August, pretty much constant. And then all of a sudden in August, those people on benefits started to decline to what we have now, about 21, 22 million. Oh, so about 8 million decline. Well, why? Well, some people went back to work in the services, as I said, who are now being laid off again. But a lot of them just exhausted their benefits after 6 months. And that was it. That's why the unemployment benefits rolls, after staying steady at 30 million from May through August, started declining. People started falling off of unemployment benefit rolls. Even as more people were coming on, people were falling off, as I said. A million on, a million off. And we're still at 21 million. You know, you keep hearing in the news, well, you know, we only have 6.9% unemployment rate and about 10 million people. Well, the media ignores the special programs of benefits. And the media ignores all those millions who are still unemployed without benefits. But you keep hearing that, don't you? Oh, it's only 10 million. You know, that's what McConnell uses as an excuse not to pass the stimulus. And make no mistake, it's McConnell in the Senate that's the roadblock to that now, as they have been behind the scenes since July. Since July. Not Trump. Trump's been playing it, you know, hiding behind the fact that he knows when every time he made an offer that McConnell would say no. So we still have 21 million people on unemployment benefits. And you know what? The benefits are about to collapse. The week after Christmas, watch. All those 12 million workers, those independent contractors, gig workers, freelancers, so forth, who are getting the PUC, special federal unemployment benefits, goes away. That's it. No more. At Christmas, no more for 12 million people. Yeah. They already cut $600 per week in August. They already cut that for people who are on state benefits. It was like a supplemental. But they continued the $600 a week for those 12 million people who are receiving it for the first time since March. But that's gone. What's the impact on the economy of all that? Well, when they took away the $600 per week in August, that cut spending, GDP estimates are by $65 billion a month. A month. So we got 4 months of that, right? No, actually 5 months it'll be. We're 4 months now. And $65 billion times five is over $300 billion taken out of spending, consumer spending, in the economy. When the 12 million lose their benefits next month, that takes out an additional $150 billion. So what do we got? Somewhere between 200 and 225 billion a month. Now that is just the initial spending. If you throw in what's called the multiplier effect, how many times that $225 billion gets respent by whoever got the first expenditure, that's called the multiplier effect, and then it doubles. It doubles. It's like $400 billion a month starting in January. Well, wait a minute. Kaplan says we may be negative here in December. Well, if that's so, we'll certainly be negative in the first quarter. And in fact, Kaplan and others, Federal Reserve and others, are predicting now if there's no stimulus and COVID gets worse, both of which are going to happen, then we will have a negative contraction in the first quarter of 2021. Yeah. Well, boy, that's a double dip, isn't it? It sure is. That's a W-shaped recovery, quote recovery, that I was predicting last March that this would happen for the reasons that it's happening. I assumed there would be a worst COVID phase in winter. There is. I assumed that after the initial stimulus in March, April, there would be no more, which there isn't. And I even predicted that political instability would intensify, which it is. Now, there are two parts of the economy that are doing okay. Manufacturing. Manufacturing has bounced back. It's still 5.6% below where it was before February, March. Still below that, but it's pretty much recovered, a lot of it. Manufacturing didn't shut down. But you know what? Manufacturing is only 11% of total GDP in the U.S. economy, only 11%. Doesn't boost the economy much. Well, what about housing? Well, housing is doing well. Well, at least new family homes are doing well. Apartment housing is not doing well. There's no snapback in spending on a multifamily housing, in other words, apartments, even though there is on single-family homes. While while at the same time we've got people being evicted. Lots of vacancies, right? Evictions. So investors aren't investing in apartments when you have all these vacancies. They are investing in single-family homes, building single-family homes. That's up 6.4% since February. Yeah. Well, you know, you got a lot of upper-income and rich people who are fleeing the cities, the urban areas, going to buy homes in the suburbs and exurbs because they can work from home in many cases, like in tech and so forth. And that's where they're going. And they're buying. They want to get out of the COVID inner cities. And they're buying these single-family homes. So what about housing? Well, all construction, housing and commercial property construction, is only 8%, 7, 8% of the economy. And new housing is maybe 3 or 4% of that. You know, forget sales of existing homes and refis. That adds nothing to GDP and the economy. Nothing. Because they're used goods sales, and GDP does not include the resale of goods, just the original sale of a good, a house or a car or whatever. Yeah, so all this refi and resales means nothing for the economy. Doesn't create any jobs. You know, only new construction would create jobs. And there, you know, there is some housing, but it's only a couple percent of the economy. So, you know, maybe 15% of the economy has recovered. The other 85%, 80% of the economy is services. You know, the other 80 to 85% has not really recovered and now is slipping back even further in certain sectors of services, you know, like entertainment services, food services, you know, restaurants, bars, personal services, gyms, and so forth. Lots of different kinds of personal services. And it's all contracting once again. And we'll do it sharply during a boom season, the holiday season. Yeah, contracting. Why? Well, because people just don't have the income. $600 extra unemployment benefits was ended August 1st, right? Well, Trump came up with a $300 a week substitute, redirecting money from the disaster relief fund, and that lasted only 4 or 5 weeks. That's gone since September. And now, therefore, in October, you have this big contraction of retail sales in October, reflecting the fact that income is seriously been reduced, right? And people falling off of unemployment benefits, not just the $600 a week, right? And now we're going to get another big hit with the 12 million here coming off benefits in December in just a few more weeks. Well, no wonder food banks are lining up all over the country. No wonder. And what's Trump doing? Nothing. Trump doesn't give a damn. Trump only cares about how he can find a way to steal back the election and to leave a scorched earth for Biden. That's all he wants. And what about McConnell? McConnell's not going to do anything. He's waiting on the Georgia elections to see if he's still going to lead the Senate. He's not going to do anything. And by the way, he doesn't believe it's needed. He actually doesn't believe it's needed. He looks around and, you know, his business buddies, banker buddies, they're doing great. Stock market's doing great. And he believes that, oh, the people who may need it are in the blue states. And I'm only the senator. My Senate is only for the red states, you know. That's the problem. Neither Trump nor the Republicans really see themselves as Americans anymore. They see themselves as the representatives of a slice of America, the red slice. That's all. Now, COVID, which is getting worse, is going to have a negative, further negative impact. You know, you got the income impact. You know, most of consumption is based upon income and changes and increases in income levels. When that's taken away, when income you know, for the mass of the 160 million people in the workforce is cut, well, then consumption is cut. But over and above that, you know, the partial shutdowns that are going on and the curfews and, you know, the de facto quarantines, that reduces retail sales too. People just don't go out, right? Consumers voluntarily reduce their spending, even when they have the income. So we have two big factors, whacking income and spending here, going on, and they're about to get worse with 12 million people losing their benefits. At the same time, you know, we have, as part of the failure to pass the stimulus here to restore income, we have state and local governments who are in trouble now beginning to lay off. I think last month's Labor Department statistics show over 200,000 were laid off by state and local governments. You know, that's a significant development. You can't get a recovery without state and local governments actually hiring people. Credit card spending. J.P. Morgan Chase tracks 30 million people. Credit card spending is way down from last year. Consumer sentiment in November declines. Usually it goes up. 3 months now it's been declining. Holiday sales. Nothing. Flat concern compared to last year. This shift to goods, in other words, manufactured goods, discrete goods, durable goods, whatever, instead of buying on services, you know, the shift to goods may not last either. Right? I'm seeing predictions that because of the virus vaccine coming, that people will hold off buying, especially this winter, more goods. You know, good sales since February, manufactured goods, housing, manufactured goods, were up 7.7% February to September. Remember, that's only 20% of the economy, 15 to 20% of the economy, whereas the other 80% of the economy went down 10.1%. Well, that's uneven. And the virus impacts the economy once again because lack of income from layoffs and unemployment benefits declining and wages declining. You know, a lot of people came back on part-time wage, part-time hours, and therefore part-time income, but not full-time. And now they're gone or going, right? And the economy impacts back on COVID. How? Well, you get more home and more community transmissions. And that's what's happening. That's what's happening with COVID. Well, what are the numbers for COVID? Oh, if you're following the news, you probably know what they are, but let me just give you some facts here. Yesterday, 187,000 new infections. 187,000. It's averaging 70, 80,000 the past week, 2 weeks, 70,000 a day on average and rising, and rising. What about the dead or hospitalizations? Hospitalizations, 80,000 plus people hospitalized, rising. And in certain states, they've run out of beds and they're shipping people to nearby states where they have beds. That's how bad it is. More than 250,000 dead, 2,000 dying a day, right? Heavily focused in the Midwest, in the red states. Yeah, convenient after the election. I wonder how some of those people would think about COVID now who voted for Trump. Yeah. And rising again, by the way, not just in the Midwest, but rising on the coast. More and more full shutdowns, Oregon, New Mexico, partial shutdowns everywhere. What about these vaccines? Well, it's a good development, vaccines, right? The announcement, you know, by Pfizer and Moderna. But wait a minute. Look at the Pfizer statement and Moderna. These are corporate PR announcements. These are not announcements that have been peer-reviewed by the FDA and others. Now, you know, I'm not saying that they're not effective. They may be proven effective, but look, it's pretty clear these pharma companies are just racing, marketing, competing with each other. Who gets the first announcement, you see? What happened here with Pfizer? Pfizer came out with, 90% effective. Well, then Moderna came out and said, we're 94.5 effective. And then Pfizer changed it and said, we're 95% effective. This is a marketing battle going on. And the others, of course, are going to have to announce very quickly, the others being AstraZeneca, right, and Johnson & Johnson, they're going to have to announce quickly because their stock is going down. It's a stock market boost, marketing game with pharma here. Now, the problem with Pfizer is that it requires storage, its vaccine storage, at a minus 100 degrees Fahrenheit, minus 7 degrees centigrade, or it spoils. And if you take it out of that freeze, it spoils real quick. That's not so good, you see, because that means that you're going to have vehicles to take this vaccine to local sites that can freeze at 100 degrees Fahrenheit. That takes special kind of technology. I don't think we have those kind of trucks. Or when they get to a hospital or location to store it there. Big problem with the Pfizer. Right? Big transport problem. And, of course, similar production problem. Now, Moderna is a little bit better. That can be stored at only minus 20 degrees Fahrenheit, and existing freezer technology will be able to handle that. So Moderna has a better chance. But look, there won't be any widespread available vaccines until April, 5 months away. In the meantime, we're not even in December, and hospitals are overloading. And incredibly, we still have a PPE shortage, personal protective equipment shortage, after 9 months. You know, if Trump was a war president, he would have sequestered factories, hired whatever he had to, signed the contracts within 30 days, and started producing this stuff ourselves. But he didn't want to step on the profits of American companies, you know, like Triple M and some of the others who are trying to make this stuff. And they're making it overseas in many cases and shipping it back. I mean, it's incredible. You know, private enterprise, it's going to save us. Private enterprise, as far as PPE is a concern, and of course you have a president who is everything private enterprise, right? Our great companies, he said, our great companies. Yeah. So great that we got a half a quarter of a million people sick and dead. By the way, forecasts are now by January 20th, we'll have over 400,000 people dead from the virus. In other words, in less than a year, we will have lost as many Americans to this virus war than we did in almost 4 years of World War II. Think about that. As many dead in this war in less than a year than were killed in the big one. Yeah. You know, roughly, I think it was 410,000 people who were lost during World War II. Well, we're going to exceed that by February. We're going to exceed that. Yeah, he's a war president, okay, but he's AWOL, you know? He's dropped his rifle and he's run into the rear. He doesn't give a shit what happens to anybody else except to figure out how he can steal the election back. Just compare what's going on in this country to what they've done in New Zealand, in New South Wales, Australia, on Taiwan, even South Korea and China. They got it under control. There is no second and third wave. It's under control, but not in this country. I mean, if there's any indictment of this system about how free-reigning capitalism kills people, the U.S. is the best example. And if there's any example of the failure of the political elites of both parties, this is the example. Okay, so COVID is making the economy worse by cutting spending and increasing unemployment, which reduces spending. Also, business will contract, slow down its investments and its inventory buildup as this occurs on the consumer side. So you're going to have, with a short lag, business contribution to GDP also declining, particularly inventories. So the economy and COVID are exacerbating each other and deteriorating. The two elements of the triple crisis, getting worse and exacerbating each other. What about the political crisis? What about the political? Well, what's going on right now? Well, Trump has not been able to stop the vote counts by sending his army of lawyers into the various states, because you got to have evidence, you see, and there isn't by very much, even though he's pushing the line and 50 million people of his 70 million voters still believe it, that there is all this evidence. Well, where is it? And they can't find it. Oh, but people believe it's there. You know, they have faith in their Donald, you see. They have faith in him. Faith, of course, is a destroyer of reason. If you got faith, well, yeah, I don't need evidence if I got faith, you see. In religious terms, I don't need evidence that we got life after death. I got faith that we do. You see, faith is a big dumber downer. And of course, it's kind of a secular religious attitude going on out there among Trump's 50 to 70 million voters. They have faith. They have faith that whatever he says is true. Boy, is that dangerous. And I've heard that, I follow the right-wing blogosphere, to see what these guys are saying and thinking. They're preparing to turn people loose on the streets. Yeah. These organizations they have, white nationalist, right-wing, they're loading their guns. And all they're doing is waiting for a word from Donald. You watch, they'll come out. I predicted that, too. The instability and the violence is a card he still can play. Well, what card is he playing now? Well, the card he's playing now is, okay, I failed in legal filings here to stop the vote. I failed. I got to move to Plan B. And Plan B is to try to get the Electoral College to change their electors in certain states. I mean, Electoral College is bad enough, isn't it? That we have such a thing instead of direct voting, one person, one vote. That's democracy. No. We vote for electors. And who the hell are these people? Who are they like? Do you know who your electors are? I bet you don't know one. Well, the state legislatures select the electors. And I'll bet you it's not a John Q. steelworker, right? Or Jim Q. Subway driver. No. These are all respectable business people. Yeah, those are the electors. Now, you may think that the electors have to vote the way the popular vote is in their state. It's a perfunctory thing, right? Not. They don't have to. Now, there have been some court decisions recently, but they've been ambiguous, you see. They haven't resolved this question that the electors might be able to vote for whoever they want. And remember, they're class basis. Well, that's what Trump is doing, in trying to do in Michigan. He's brought the key leaders of the Republican majority in the state legislature in Michigan to the White House today. Now, why is he doing that? He just wants to have tea and cakes with them? No. What he's going to try to do is see if he can get them to select electors who will vote for him instead of for Biden. Can he do that? Legally, perhaps. Right? Because the state legislatures select the electors. And if it's a Republican state legislature, the possibility is there that they will ignore electors who will vote for the popular vote, then vote who the hell they want. You know, the veil of American democracy is being stripped off in this election. People able to see what it really is. Not only the fact that we don't directly elect the president, we elect electors, but the fact that the elites might even be able to get around electors if they don't like what they vote. So that's what's going on, you see. Those states in which Trump has challenged the vote, I'm talking about, you know, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Nevada, Arizona. Those are the six states that determine this election, you see, because of Electoral College. The hell with the popular vote, that don't mean diddle. It's just six states. Majorities in six states determine this election. You know, you take away the electoral votes in those six states and you flip the totals. You know, 306 for Biden and, 232 or something like that for Trump. You flip them. Yeah, just six states. Yeah. So what he's going to, in each of those six states, you have Republican majorities in the state legislature. Republican majorities. So Trump's strategy is, if he can't reverse the vote by legal means, he's going to put pressure on those Republican legislatures to select electors that will choose him instead of Biden. That's what's going on now, right now. And boy, are the political elites in this country worried. You know, just look at the New York Times, like a three-page story on this. You know, I said they would do this way back in articles in September. Well, now the New York Times is talking about it. Even the Wall Street Journal is talking about it. Yeah, this is a real threat. This is a real threat. And, well, how can you get away with that? He's intimidating the hell out of these Republicans. They're scared shitless that he's got 70 million votes, that next time they run in a primary, he'll put up one of his friends and tell everybody to vote for his friend, not for them. They're thinking about their jobs in the future, and that's why they're shaking in their boots. That's why they'll do whatever Trump wants them to do. Really, they go so far as to blatantly select electors that the state voters did not vote for? It could happen. Well, wait a minute, people say, critics of that analysis, they say, well, wait a minute, you know, in some of these states like Michigan, you have Republican governors, and they won't send their state electoral votes to Congress if that happens. You see, because the decision dates are the electoral colleges in the states meet on December 8th, and they have to decide by December 14th, and then they send it to their state governor, and the state governor then on December 23rd sends it to Congress, and Congress decides in the final analysis who the president would be on January 6th. Yeah. Okay, so critics of this analysis say, oh, that's incredible. It's not going to happen. I hope it doesn't. But they say, oh, the Democratic state governors, you know, you've got Democratic state governors in all three of those swing states in the north, in Michigan, and Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, they simply won't send it. Well, that plays into Trump's hand, too, because then Trump can say, oh, look, the Electoral College can't come to a decision because the Democratic governors aren't sending in the votes of their electors here to Congress. So, you know, they can't make a decision. And Trump runs to the Supreme Court, 6-3 majority in his favor now, and said, look, the states can't make a, you know, they're holding up the electors, you know. What are you going to do about it, Supreme Court? Supreme Court then passes the hot potato and says, well, according to the Constitution, you know, we're not going to decide, but this has to be sent to the House of Representatives per the Constitution to decide who the president is going to be. Ah, now that plays into Trump's hands, too. How is that? Well, because if it's thrown into the U.S. House of Representatives, keep in mind, it's not based upon how many representatives the Democrats have and how many representatives the Republicans have in the House, you know, which will be after January. It will be, I think, probably 222 to, well, what's the difference between that and 438? 222 and 216 for Republicans. You need 218 for majority, see? But that's not how they will vote if it goes to the House. How they vote is one vote per state delegation. In other words, there's only 50 votes that will be cast. And if there's 26, 27 red states, Trump states, and they vote for Trump because they're terrified, guess who wins if it's thrown into the House? Trump wins. Trump wins. Not Biden. Yeah. That's why he's not turning over anything to Biden, you know, in the transition, because he's got a game he's got in mind that he can still win, you know, if not by the votes, if not even by Electoral College, then by going to the Supreme Court and throwing it into the House where they vote state by state, one vote. Yeah. Well, some say, well, but you know, Pelosi won't let those states vote that way. She won't seat the representatives from those states that were going to switch electoral votes. She won't recognize them. Ah, but that gives Trump another excuse to go to SCOTUS, Supreme Court, and say, see, the House can't make a decision either. This is the Democratic governors wouldn't make a decision. Look, there's no way except for the Supreme Court to make the decision. And he's got a 6-3 majority there. See, this is the political game they got in mind. And this reveals, you know, what a farce American democracy has become. Well, it always was there, you know, safely in the background, right, to prevent a popular revolution from below. Yeah, the elites, you know, have all these, they call them checks and balances. They're really obstructions to the popular will. As long as Trump has 70 million people in his pocket, voted for him, he can intimidate the Republicans who become, you know, his handmaiden. That's all they are. And you know where that typically happens? Where the political party becomes just an appendage of the leader, their Führer, right? Nazi Germany, 1926, is when Hitler really put the Nazi party in his back pocket. And they will do, at that point, whatever they wanted. You know, before that, there were contending forces for the leadership of that party. But Hitler took it over, finally, in 26, 27. and they just do his bidding. That's another step towards fascism, you see, that occurs. Then they got to destroy any other contending political party, which is what they're planning to do with the Democrats, right? Scorched earth, make it so bad for Biden when he comes in, he can't get anything passed. Use the Senate, you know. Georgia election will determine that. I say it's going to be 51-49 when it's over. Senators, Republicans, McConnell still in charge. McConnell will shoot down everything Biden comes up with. And, you know, I bet he even shoots down cabinet appointments. Yeah, I bet he even does that, unprecedented for the first time. Totally hamper the Democrats from doing anything, make it worse for them, and then in 2 years, in 2022, point to it, and then Pelosi loses the House as well as the Senate. Yeah, that's the way it's going to go. You know, I'm afraid that Biden is going to come up with a minimal program. Maybe that's all he can come up with if McConnell has veto power over the presidency in the House of Representatives. Why should one institution be able to exercise such veto power? Why does the Senate even have the right alone to advise and consent? In other words, to negate, veto any appointments at all. Why isn't that shared by the House? Why is there a 60 senator vote to pass legislation? Why is there a filibuster? Why the hell is there even a Senate? We should have a parliamentary system. You know, the Senate is there to stop popular progress through the House of Representatives, the people's body. It's there. That was always the intention in the Constitution. You know, for a long time, we couldn't even directly vote for senators. It was the state legislatures, again, who appointed their senators. Yeah, same is going on with the president. See, that wasn't changed, just the senator to direct vote. But the Senate has too much power. So does the Supreme Court have too much powers. Supreme Court was never considered a third branch in government. You know, it was never even discussed as having the right to overturn elections. It was never even given that right. It assumed that right. It assumed that right back in 1803. It usurped that right to declare laws unconstitutional. It never had that authority, and even in the Constitution. So the Constitution has all these obstacles built into it to prevent popular democracy. Very clever document. Oh, but we really, you know, admire it. It's the lodestone of democracy. No, we got a problem, folks. We got a problem with institutions in this country. We got a problem with Electoral College. We got a problem with a Senate with too much power. We have a problem with a Supreme Court with too much power. All of which are now very clearly stifling popular democracy, stifling the other branches of government. It's a big issue. Well, what are we going to see in the next 60 days besides Trump's attempt to manipulate the Electoral College, right? He won't concede. No way. I doubt if he's even going to ride to the Capitol building on January 20th. You know, typically the both presidents, outgoing, incoming, ride together, you know, to show the transition to the Capitol building. I bet he doesn't ride. He's not going to ride in that car. He's not going to concede ever. He's running again already, or setting the groundwork for running again in 2024. He's going to pre-pardon a bunch of his cronies. You watch. He may even pre-pardon himself, because it's becoming clearer and clearer, you know, by cases in New York City that this guy is engaged in tax fraud. Yeah. So he'll pardon all these cronies. By the way, you know, his attorney general already pardoned this general from Mexico, Salvador Cienfuegos, right, who was the key man in taking bribes in Mexico from the cartels, you know, to let them do their stuff. Yeah. And so he got arrested in L.A., brought to New York, and, the Mexicans, president there, AMLO, you know, who's just another Barack Obama, said, no, you got to let our president, our general go. Well, we will deal with him legally here in the, when he comes home. Not, come on. Who believes that? Well, they let him go. Let him go. The guy behind allowing all the cartels to do their stuff with bringing drugs to the U.S., they let him go, right? Yeah. All kind of business deals are going to be made, reciprocation here, all kind of contracts to cronies and everything, so that when he leaves office, Trump can get all kind of payback for his businesses, you see. That's going to happen too, right? All kind of last-minute deals we're going to see, all kind of appointments and firings. He's going to entrench as many of his ideological supporters, you know, within the state government bureaucracy as he can to disrupt and report back to him and disrupt the Biden administration, right? He's going to set up his own media network, I predict, once he leaves. He's going to announce his candidacy for 2024 here very quickly after January 20, right? He's gonna siphon off a lot of the fundraising for his legal campaigns to use for his next political campaign. He's gonna sell off a lot of his Trump properties to raise cash before the market value of those properties collapses in the spring. He's gonna do that. He's gonna leave a scorched earth for Biden in foreign policy and tariffs and all kinds of different ways. Right, COVID funding, et cetera. He's gonna wreck as much as he can, on an accelerating basis here, between now and the next 60 days. But the worst thing is his maneuvers here with the Electoral College. Watch that closely. It's really got the political elites who aren't Trumpists quite worried. So, political crisis. Intensifying, and of course that will have an effect on business uncertainty and business investment and hiring and therefore jobs and income and spending in turn. You see, all these three things are interrelated, and as I said, and I'll finish on this note, coming down the track here, spring, summer of next year, is going to be maybe a financial crisis, and now we got the Treasury Secretary Mnuchin feuding with the central bank about Mnuchin wanting the money back that he gave the central bank, right? Unprecedented. Institutions are fighting with each other. Further evidence of the crisis. Okay, so that's it for today. That's the happy note right before Thanksgiving. And we'll watch all these three very closely. U.S. triple crisis worsens. I'm out.